you know, it's been a great run. When I first came into the legislature, I was 26 and single. You know, I'm now 38, and we have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, and you know, Steph and I just have different priorities, and it is a different phase in my life, a different time. I am incredibly grateful for having the opportunity to serve, but I also believe our founding fathers truly envisioned a process by which you take time out of your private sector life to come and get involved in public service, but ultimately you go back to the private sector, and that's where I'm headed.
You still have 4 years of eligibility in the House. Any thoughts of going back over there and maybe join with your former Senate colleague, Kevin Engler?
No, you know, I'm glad for my time in the House, but after being in the Senate, having the opportunity to work within a body of 34 versus a body of 163, I am better cut for the cloth of the Senate than the House. And really, for me, it's not even about the House and the Senate. It's really about what's the next chapter in life. And the next chapter in life for me is spending some more time at home with my kids.
Tell us a little bit about the early part of your legislative career, those 4 years in the House. When you first came in, what kind of goals and plans did you have? And did they come true? Did you get close?
You know, I remember when I first came in, I came in with term limits. So I was elected in 2002 as term limits came into effect in Missouri. Of 163 members in the state House, the year I came in, 90 of us were new. So we were a voting majority. If we would all stuck together, we could have dramatically changed it or dramatically messed it up. The reality is that, you know, I actually remember running those first couple of years and saying to myself, I plan on going to Jefferson City. I'm going to take a couple of years and get this mess fixed and go home. Well, 12 years later, we're still down here fighting the mess. And what I never anticipated when I first got here that unfortunately I have now seen as true is I never anticipated the bureaucrats and the way that they can slow down the process. I mean, my biggest fights in Jefferson City haven't been Republicans versus Democrats. It's been elected officials versus bureaucrats, and that they get ingrained in the way that they do things. And even when you pass new laws and change the policy, getting them to necessarily change at times is very, very tough. The other piece of it that I didn't anticipate is I had no idea the level of control that special interest has in this process. And that's one of the most disappointing things is what I've watched over my 12 years here is I believe the special interest, the people who walk the halls and throw money around in this process, those people actually control the process way more than most elected officials. And it's interesting as I now take a step back and look at it. I look at some of the things we did, why we did them, and at the time, you kind of scratch your head. You think, now, I wonder why we're doing this. And hindsight being 2020, you can now look at things and say, wow, we did it because a donor wanted this, or a donor needed this, or a donor gave X number of dollars and this happened. You know, ranging from the village law to how we dealt with work comp when I was still in the House. It's been a disappointment in that aspect. You know, my time in Jefferson City has probably been the most challenging part of my time in public service. I mean, I love being at home. I love, you know, being able to help people in the area. I love, you know, if someone has a problem, then being able to call. And more often than not, we can at least help in some way, not always exactly what they want. And sometimes there's just things that are out of your control and out of your hands and nobody can help with. But overall, as I look at my time in public service and look at the last 12 years, the piece that I never anticipated was the level of influence a special interest have on the process.
Do you feel like that term limits have given the people that walk the halls the advantage and the edge over those who are elected to office?
I think that clearly because of 16-year term limits, and that's assumed someone serves both House and Senate, there are always going to be people who lobby here that will have been here longer than the members. So clearly institutional knowledge is lost with term limits. But I also believe that new blood, new ideas, we gain that with term limits. And I think that the verdict is still out. Do they work? Do they not work? Are we getting a better form of government? Are we not? But clearly there were some unintended consequences now that we look at term limits and how they're operating. This idea of a revolving door, you know, the number of people that come into here, they come here to change government. they slowly become more of a defender of government. When they leave here, their goal is to figure out how to make money off of government, i.e. lobbying, i.e. an appointment by the governor. And that I never anticipated. I never even thought about, honestly. And throughout my time here, there's never been a time that I wanted to come lobby here. There's never been a time here that I wanted an appointment or anything like that. But I have been surprised by that, because I guess that was, maybe I was just naive, a young kid from Northwest Missouri, not understanding the process. But without a doubt, with term limits brings a new dynamic, and the benefits of term limits are tremendous, but there are also consequences. And the institutional knowledge, the idea that someone has been here for 20 years and knows why we did something or why we didn't do it, those will be the types of things that we lose.
You sponsored one of the ethics bills that were filed this year. Didn't get very far, if I remember correctly. What do you want to see happen? What were some of the things you wanted to see happen with that?
You know, I think from an ethics perspective, I think that you have to close a revolving door. I think that just like in Washington, D.C., you should have to set out at least a couple of years before you're a member that then gets to go lobby. I think that there is a real problem right now in Jefferson City with the idea that the lavish lifestyle that at times people live here. What I mean by that is, you know, I have a tough time ever understanding why someone think it is okay to go out and have a dinner and it costs $5,000. If you're not going to spend your own money that way, you shouldn't be spending somebody else's money that way. So the way that lobbyists are able to report to committees and caucuses and really shield the members who are abusing that, I think that needs to be cleaned up. I in my opinion, I don't believe that an elected official should be able to be a consultant or political consultant for another elected official, because all that does is create a process by which you funnel money from lobbyists through one elected official into the personal pockets of another. So there are some what I believe to be very simple things that we should clean up. I'm a guy who also believes that whenever you're out of office, any political funds that you have left over, you should have to get rid of them. I don't think that we should have elected officials who are able to leave office with millions of dollars in their political banks that they then get to use that money to help advance their lobby opportunities, or take that money and use the interest of it to travel on or do other things like that. And so there are some what I consider to be pretty common sense issues that I don't know why the legislature wouldn't pass. But as you saw this year, we couldn't even get it out of the Senate, let alone get it through the House.
And what about campaign contribution limits?
You know, I'm a guy who, I do not believe in contribution limits. I've actually, during my time here, I've operated under limits. I've operated in the unlimited world that we're in now. When we had limits, all that happened were there were individuals, groups, organizations that set up hundreds of different committees, and they would literally launder the money through the committees in a way that, quote, made it legal. Well, the problem with that is that there's no transparency. You don't know where the money's really coming from. I'm a person who has always felt that transparency is the most important piece. So I would rather not have limits and have true transparency in the process. Now, I will tell you that with third-party committees, 529s, some of the new campaign finance rules and processes that are happening because of federal changes, I think that you will see more and more money and a greater percentage of the overall money that is engaged in politics come through third parties as we continue to move forward. We saw it in the last two presidential cycles. I think that we'll just continue to see it greater and greater going forward.
You made a run for lieutenant governor, fell just short of getting the Republican nomination. Tell us about what you learned from that whole experience, and how was it getting so close but not quite getting there?
You know, I'm a person that's always believed you go give it your all, and when you're done, you have no regrets. In 2008, I ran for treasurer and lost by literally less than 2 points. When I ran for lieutenant governor in 2012, again, lost by less than a couple points. So all of my statewide races have been very, very close. And, you know, on both of those races, I can honestly sit here and tell you that I gave it everything I had. There's nothing we held back. There's nothing we didn't do. And if you look at them and say, what would have I done different? there's always little things, but who knows if that would have been the change or not. I'm a person who believes that things were meant to be at times, and in both cases, for whatever reason, I wasn't meant to make it right over the finish line, and I didn't, but that's okay. And like, as I said before, I've been very blessed to have 12 years in public service, and now it's time to go back to the private sector.
Would you ever reconsider getting back into politics, running for another statewide office or some other office?
You know, that's a great question. And Stephanie and I have talked about that too, as we talked about, you know, what's right for our family and where do we go post public life. You never want to say never, because there may be a time, but right now for us, for the next, you know, for the next 15 to 20 years, my priorities are my kids while they're still at home, as they go through school, being part of their lives, being there as they play t-ball and basketball and all the other wonderful things that kids do these days. You know, being there at night to make sure that we as parents are actively engaged in their education. And as they grow into real people, for lack of a better term. But I never want to say never, but right now it will be another chapter in my life if I was to ever re-enter public service.
Two-part question. What do you consider your greatest accomplishment in office, whether it's in the House or in the Senate, and what was your biggest disappointment or biggest unfulfilled challenge?
The thing that I'm most proud of is 12 years ago, when I came into the legislature, we were debating things like tapping the rainy day fund to pay the bills. We were debating almost a $1 billion tax increase that Bob Holden was putting forward. We were debating, how do you take more from people to fund government? 12 years later, we've cut the taxes, the franchise tax. We've now cut income tax. Now the debate has shifted. The true debate that we're now having is one about, how do you allow people to keep more of their own money, because that's what's best ultimately for the future of our state? So what I feel really good about is the entire dialogue has changed down here and how we view government, or how the majority of people in this legislature view government, has changed. So from that perspective, I think that is probably the greatest accomplishment during my time here. You know, I've always been a guy that's been pretty fiscally responsible. Fiscal issues have always been my top priority. So I feel like that today we're better than we have been in the past, although we are by no means perfect and there's plenty of room for improvement there. In terms of greatest challenges or things we haven't gotten done, you know, I've been very disappointed in our inability to bring real reform to our tort system. I've been very disappointed in our unwillingness to take on a judiciary that is just flat out broken. The nonpartisan court plan, as they call it, which is really a hidden term for allowing lawyers to pick judges in key areas of our state, I don't believe it's serving the public well. And I believe that with some, what I think are significant but yet reasonable changes to the plan, we could actually have judges that reflect the people of our state. Right now what we have is we have a judicial branch that is literally legislating from the bench. And if you look at half the stuff that we deal with in any given year, it's because of some court decision or some judge, either at the appellate or the Supreme Court level, has literally rewritten the way that we practice law. You know, for 40 years, we practiced employment law in accordance with the federal guidelines. And then after a couple court cases, they've now completely rewritten employment law here. If you look at how workers' comp was handled, up until a few weeks ago, for 40 years, we practiced it the same way. A few weeks ago, through a Supreme Court ruling, they dramatically changed it. And so I don't believe the role of the judiciary is to create the law or change the law. It's to determine whether or not it's constitutional. And right now what's happening is the third branch of government, the judicial branch, is really interpreting the law and writing the laws. And for whatever reason, the legislative branch has not been willing to put a stop to that. We've not been willing to take them on, and I'm very disappointed in that. The other thing that, you know, clearly I've fought for during my 8 years here is to try to bring some type of reform and sanity to the tax credit process in our state. The state of Missouri, we have a tax policy that's broken, but we have one of the largest and what I would consider to be fiscally dangerous tax credit processes in the country. You know, the only state in the nation that spends more money in low-income housing than the state of Missouri is the state of California, which has the fourth largest economy in the world. You know, a couple of years ago, and it's been a while since I've looked, but on the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, the state of Missouri spent more money in 1 year than the 13 original colonies spent combined. We have to rebalance. And when you have nearly 60 tax credit programs on the books, they are literally off the book spending. I don't know how you ever have a true fiscally responsible approach to budgeting when you have that much of your budget being spent outside of the appropriations process. And literally through my 8 years here, the mindset, the debate, and the dialogue of the Senate has come a full 180 degrees. And the majority of the members of the Senate now understand why we need tax credit reform, why we need to put reasonable caps on these programs. They understand, whether they agree with what my cap levels are or not, they understand that we have to bring some sanity to this process. Unfortunately, because of political contributions, and in some cases, in my opinion, straight out corruption, we've never been able to get a reform bill of any magnitude through the House. And so until we fix the broken process that is plaguing our state house, there's going to be a lot of good government things that are going to be difficult to get done over there.
Anything else you want to throw in?
You know, I just want to close with the gratitude and the thanks to the people of the 12th Senatorial District, the people of the 4th Legislative District when I was in the House. Having the opportunity to serve is tremendous, and it's an incredible blessing. I am so grateful for having been here for 12 years. You know, I'm a person who actually believes that we have a responsibility, that we have a responsibility to try to make tomorrow brighter because of our actions today. And I hope that 20 years from now, when I look back on my time in public service, I can truly say, and I can truly point to things that say, you know, because we did this, we as a state and we as a country are better off. And only time will be the judge of that.